This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and I'm Darren Rockman. This is another in our best of series where we go back and have a look at some of the best podcasts that we've recorded over the last couple of years. And this time, we're going to go back and have a look at NFTs, non-fungible tokens, part of the crypto universe that has come under such stress in recent months. A podcast we recorded with Paul Veredidicat of Pantera Capital. Really worth listening to. Enjoy. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. Welcome, everybody, to the Definitely Uncertain podcast. My name is Darren Rockman, and I am a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the 21-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And we have been looking on previous episodes of the podcast at the question of blockchain. And a few weeks back, we did an episode on digital currencies with my partner, Dave Ram. Today, we're going to look at another aspect of it. And in order to talk to us about it, I have on the line from California, Paul Veredidicat, who is a partner at Pantera Capital. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Darren. How's it going?
Great. Thank you very, very much for joining. We appreciate it. So, Paul, look, I think that nobody really was looking at this aspect of blockchain, but the whole NFT thing exploded back in March when somebody called Beeple, an artist that nobody had ever heard of, sold a piece of art through Christie's or with Christie's called Every Day's the First 5,000 Days for no less than $69 million. And that made everybody wake up a little bit. So these NFTs, these non-fungible tokens, are digital certificates linked to, for example, a piece of digital art, which authenticate one copy of that art as being original. So let's start with you, and we'll get back to NFTs. Tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got into the sort of blockchain world, and a bit about Pantera Capital.
Sure. So I'll start with Pantera Capital. Pantera Capital is one of the earliest and largest institutional investors in cryptocurrencies and blockchain companies. It was founded by Dan Moorhead, who used to be the CFO and head of global macro trading at Tiger Management. Pantera Capital, since 2013, has launched funds. And so our first fund was the first institutional hedge fund for Bitcoin. So we allow high net worth individuals to just buy Bitcoin. We also have a VC fund that invests into early stage equity in companies. We have an early stage token fund that invests into tokens before it actually launches and hits the market. And then we have our last fund, which is an actively traded fund for positions that are liquid or positions that are already on exchanges. So that includes Bitcoin, Ethereum, and you know maybe the top 100 cryptocurrencies on CoinGecko. And myself, I've been in the space since 2014. You know, my background is mostly in startups and venture capital. I started off my career as an economic consultant. I did business development and growth for some early stage startups. And then my last venture capital firm was focused just on mobile. But in 2013, my friend at Lightspeed told me about cryptocurrencies. They told me about Bitcoin. And when I read the white paper and when I read the Mark Andreessen New York Times article about the use cases, I just fell down the rabbit hole. I knew that this was early, but it was the right time to get in. There was a huge opportunity. It took a little bit longer than I thought, but here we are now.
Here we are. Yeah. And Bitcoin over $55,000. So, hey, who would have believed it? Apparently you.
Apparently I did. Yeah, I know. It was 700 when I joined. It went down all the way to 139. And then it's just been on a crazy run.
It's been on a crazy run. It has been indeed. Well, thanks for that. So let's now focus on NFTs. NFT stands for non-fungible tokens, which is not a particularly easy name to understand. So explain to us what NFTs are and what is the problem that they are coming to solve.
Sure. So, you know, I'll start off on a high level with the blockchain, which is a decentralized ledger that is not maintained by any one party. It's actually maintained by a bunch of different parties that are securing the network. And again, the beauty of the blockchain is that once something is recorded on the blockchain, it cannot be changed. It's immutable. So the great thing about that is it provides trust for any sort of transaction. Now, what's happened with collectibles and the problem with collectibles these days, I think of NFTs, just think about them as collectibles, is the fact that you're not really quite sure, you know, if something is authentic or not. So, you know, when you have a piece of artwork, a Monet or something, you have to go through the process of figuring out if it's real. But the beauty of these NFTs are they are digital pieces of media, and versus trying to figure out if something is real, this is created from scratch right off the bat. And so you know that this is something that is, that's authentic because you are verifying it right from its original source. Now, what makes it special on the blockchain is the fact that it's being recorded right away on a blockchain, and there is scarcity. There's only a limited number of whatever is being created. And through the blockchain, the authenticity is recorded. But when it gets transferred to someone else through a sale and through further transactions of sales, it's all being recorded on the blockchain. So you know for a fact that what you are getting as a buyer is completely real and authentic. And so that is what's happening right now, are people are creating new types of work that are being authentic, authentic and real, and all tracked on a decentralized ledger, the blockchain.
Okay. So let's now turn that into practical terms. You know, how do NFTs enable commercial transactions which may not have been enabled until now?
Yeah, so I think the way to think about it is, you know, these scarce pieces of collectibles, digital collectibles, are being created right now. And as they are being recorded on the blockchain, you can go back and actually trace each and every one of these transactions. So I think that's the beauty of it. Not only can you actually track ownership, but you can actually now track how many times it's being transacted, and then tie transaction fees and certain rules for each of those transactions back to each of these different parties, which is never been done before.
Okay, so Paul, you create a video. I buy it off you for $69 million. Well done. But you're also going to require that every time I sell a copy of it, I give you another $10.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
That's never before been able to be done, at least in an automated way where you don't have to have a bunch of people verifying things. This is all being done on code.
Okay. So, you know, if we go back to basics, when I bought the Monet, that you described before, I brought an art expert and he told me this is an original Monet. If I understood the NFTs correctly, when you create that digital film or the Beeple piece of art, there's nothing to distinguish it from any other copy. In fact, just before this podcast, I went online and I made a copy of that Beeple every day is the first 5,000 days. I just did a, you know, copy paste onto my desktop, and hey, that's $69 million, but it's not, at least in the way the NFTs are sort of structuring it, because it doesn't have this NFT connected to it, right?
Exactly, because you can't verify it on the blockchain that this is actually like an authentic one. You know, that's the real difference here, is that you can actually go back and say, hey, this is authentic because it does tie to that decentralized ledger.
Okay, so potentially really very powerful, but I want to touch on a point that you made before, which is this point about scarcity. Because in the real world, back to the Monet example, there is only one Monet, or one of each Monet, because Monet only made one. Here, like in my example, I actually just took a copy. The NFT itself is not the piece of art. The NFT is like, you know, like a certificate of authenticity, really. You know, this is what you got with the art. So is it really creating scarcity, or is it something separate? Because the art doesn't sit on the blockchain, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, the art does not sit on the blockchain. It's just exactly what you mentioned. It's just a certificate that's on the blockchain. But then, of course, you actually own the art piece. Exactly.
Right. So my question, I suppose, is that guy that went and spent $69 million, by the way, a guy who'd made most of, or if not all of his money,
using Bitcoin. I invested into a startup company. Yes, I know that.
Right. So is that real scarcity, or are we talking about something different?
You know, it at least for right now, it is scarcity. You know, it's up to the creator to determine, you know, how many pieces, you know, he or she creates. And most likely they won't create too many because, you know, at the end of the day, it's just like regular collectibles. At the end of the day, you create too many, then,
right,
you know, people don't feel like it's special. You know, people are buying this because of them thinking that this is cool and that they could have pride around it, right? And so for the most part, I think things will be digitally scarce now. You know, will everything have as much value as the Beeple artwork? I don't foresee it that way, but right. I do think that what we are seeing here is almost like what Substack has done for journalism and allowing anybody to be a writer. Now, not everybody is going to be, you know, a tremendous writer and a New York Times level quality and make that much money. But you are now able to, you know, there was a woman that has a pretty famous meme. It's a meme called Overly Attached Girlfriend. And she made a really funny picture of her with a face that made it seem like she was kind of an overbearing girlfriend. And she made that photo and, you know, tokenized it as an NFT and sold it for $400,000. Now, again, I think the market is a bit frothy and people are making money during this time and want to support, you know, up and coming artists and maybe overly support them right now. But she made $411,000 and that's going to be life changing for her. But, you know, imagine people in, you know, emerging markets being able to create their own artwork digitally and be able to make money off of it. So it's really enabling more longer tail folks. And so I think it's gonna be a balance of way more longer tail folks, just like what Substack has created for writers. But then again, it also enables what we're seeing influencers that are basically selling artwork or different types of media and basically feeding off of their brand, which is also really interesting. So it's gonna be really sort of extreme.
Right. But of course, influencers are trends and the trends tend to pass. You know, I don't use a hula hoop anymore. I you know, maybe once upon a time I did. But so, you know, how much of this is really a trend that's going to pass and how much, you know, maybe I'm just gotten old. I don't know. And how much of this is really here to stay? And you know, Is a $69 million sale of something that I can download for free a good thing for this market, or is it making a joke of the market?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely highlighting that it is starting off very, very frothy. I do think that people, even more so than in 2017 with ICOs, you know, people do think that there is something here because of just like, how fast it's moving and, you know, just being able to sort of experience it and have it be, you know, fairly tangible. I think what we are seeing right now is this is happening during a bull market and people are here to support a trend. People are making so much money and therefore all of the prices of these NFTs are inflated and we are going to have a correction. But, you know, just like in 2018, 2019, I think this is going to evolve where we're going to see a bunch of different trial and error on what types of media do get created. And then we will sort of see new types of platforms that do emerge where we do go with this is we are going to see a longer tail of artists come out and actually be discovered. And, you know, we're going to see tokens that help that discovery. And we will see NFTs take off again, but I think, you know, we are in a little bit of a frothy market and a little bit of a bubble and we're going to cool off and we'll see what happens in terms of where the thing develops.
Okay. So now maybe let's start to talk to some of the issues around NFTs. And I want to start, you know, Anil Dash, who's the CEO of Glitch and created what was arguably, or at least so he says, in the Atlantic, the first NFT back in 2014. So he said, he made a point, which was, you know, the NFT actually links to a web address, and that web address points to a computer. And if that computer is no longer there, then you've got a certificate, but you haven't got anything that the certificate attaches to. And, you know, I think that anybody that's sort of looked at the history of computing is aware of some of the problems that develop as technology advances. And we don't have computers that can, you know, play or run old programs because the language don't exist, the hardware doesn't exist, nobody wants to maintain it. Is this a problem when you think about, you know, that Monet that's been sitting for hundreds of years on a wall, and now, you know, maybe in 100 years' time, none of the technology that we know today will even be workable?
Yeah, so there's a few different things that I think continue to need to be solved, and some of the things that have been solved already, which are making NFTs happening right now. I think, you know, what has been solved already is, you know, more ways of storage. And so, you know, we have decentralized file storage, like you know, Filecoin. We have another one called Arweave that are providing, you know, ways that, you know, people can store things and not have it be centralized and not have it go down. So I think that's a storage, you know, solution. I think we're seeing things around decentralized finance that is really helping people, you know, be able to, you know, interact with these NFTs in a more permissionless way and have places to actually exchange these NFTs eventually. But the technology is there, and there's actually the proliferation of tokens, which I think is very, very essential for NFTs, because, you know, you really do need to be able to incentivize people to come in and curate and all of that. So I think that's there. What's missing, though, is the fact that we still have to use MetaMask. We still have to use addresses. There's certain places where you can use credit cards, but fiat on-ramp is going to be something that needs to get better and solved. And then we also need to have more scalability. So if I'm spending, you know, $50 to $100 for a crypto transaction, that could be more expensive than what the NFT costs. Right. So I think that needs to be solved. And then, of course, like if this is all about pride, you need to make sure that you can easily display your NFTs. So there aren't really any good Instagrams or Pinterest or art galleries out there, whether it is digitally or maybe even being physically able to like easily show it physically too. So I think those are all things that need to be, you know, addressed going forward.
So Paul, the museum of the future is just a set of flat screen TVs, you know, flipping NFT labeled art. You know, we're not going to see them anymore. It's going to be in someone's basement.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be created by your neighbor.
Yeah, indeed. So I want to touch on one other aspect of this, which is the environmental aspect. And this is obviously something which is an issue for the entire crypto industry. The amount of energy that it takes to create and support these platforms. So, you know, how do you approach, you know, as one of the world's more experienced crypto investors, maybe the most experienced, I don't know. How do you deal with this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think with Bitcoin, that is the largest cryptocurrency by market cap. You know, it's never going to move to a proof of stake. It's always going to be a proof of work network. And, you know, hopefully we'll see more green ways of producing the energy that's needed to, you know, to mine transactions. But, you know, outside of that, I mean, you know, we are seeing some shifts over to using more hydro and even using other types of energy. But every other network is moved over to proof of stake. And that is a way to secure the network by, you know, putting money up to sort of vouch for what's going on. And so I think that's going to be the trend of the future. And that should be a lot more environmentally friendly.
Okay, cool. So just sort of wrapping up, what do you see as some of the future uses for NFTs?
You know, I think of NFTs almost like Bitcoin. It's a store of value, but when you have something that has value, and you know, it could, you know, I think NFTs could eventually get to a certain point, at least some of them, to actually have a bit more stable value. But at the end of the day, once you have value, then you can do everything from use it as collateral for loans. You can, you know, use it as forms of payment. You can, you know, again, just speculate with it. But, you know, I think similarly, what you can do with Bitcoin or what you can do with stable coins, you can do with NFTs. And it's just going to enable more and more capital to come into the, you know, into the ecosystem because it's programmable. And so that's the kind of neat thing with it. I think we're already starting to see it in the NFT in the DeFi market, where instead of being able to have to use, you know, your stable coins or another cryptocurrency to secure a loan, you could just, you know, back it by NFT. And I think that's kind of cool.
Okay, well, that's we'll watch and see, and I'm going to send you after this a small JPEG that I made, and you can just send me that $69 million, and you'll I'm telling you, it's a great investment.
No, it's amazing. I'll even autograph it for you too.
And then you'll sell it back to me for $69 million, and then we'll be quits. Hey, now there's a transaction that we should be doing. Okay, Paul, thank you very, very much. Paul, coming from Pantera Capital in California, really appreciate you being on Definitely Uncertain. Thanks, everybody, for watching, and check out more episodes coming your way soon. Bye-bye.